Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome into the Playbook for a Wednesday on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. Eric Scalavino, Patriots Football Weekly, in the house. Special guest, even more specialer than you.
What? Huh?
I know, it's hard to believe, isn't it? Special guest today, the one and only Hall of Famer, Bob Griese, is going to join us at the top of the second hour of the program today. Yes,
wow.
He will be with us. So
that is special.
Yes, it very much is. You know, here's a guy that, in all honesty, I rooted like hell against for most of my adolescence. Well, let's face it, I was a Cowboy fan.
Yeah.
You know, and the one game that, you know, the Cowboys actually got to go up against, you know, his Dolphins, they managed to win Super Bowl VI. Did I get the right one? I think it was Super Bowl VI, yes. Because Super Bowl V was when they lost to Jim O'Brien and the Colts.
And the Colts, yeah, right.
So Super Bowl VI that Roger Staubach and the Cowboys beat Bob Griese and the Dolphins, and it was Super Bowl VII the next year that the Dolphins
went.
Yeah. Right, precisely.
17-0.
Right. So, you know, he certainly had his share of, you know, fame and glory, and he'd kind of dipped out of the limelight, really, as far as football is concerned, after he left, you know, covering college football games for ABC and ESPN for a few years, retired a couple of years ago, I think actually after the 11 season, if I'm not mistaken, and then last year rejoined the ranks of the media because of the untimely passing of Jim Mandich, who you might recall as part of the Dolphins broadcast crew. And so now he's for the, this is his second year to be the color guy
on the radio.
On the radio.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so he's back in it doing the analyzation work on the Dolphins radio broadcasts.
Huh.
So kind of cool. And looking forward to having a chance to visit with him because here's a guy that has probably forgotten more football than you and I will ever know.
Well,
think about it.
Certainly has had the opportunity, yeah.
Played it at an extremely high level.
Mm-hmm. Had a son who
was, you know, certainly had great success as a collegian, had moderate amount of success as well as a pro.
Broadcasting experience,
all of it, and reached the Hall of Fame, reached the pinnacle in 1990, I think it was, that I was reading earlier today. I think he was 90, in the class of 90. So he didn't take people long to realize what they had when they had Bob Griese as a quarterback. And who really better to dissect and analyze, perhaps, the Miami Dolphins organization than Bob Griese?
Seriously.
He is Mr. Dolphin,
really?
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, more so, I mean, I remember back in the 70s, you know, it was obviously Kick and Zonka, but it was always Greasy Kick and Zonka,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, of course, you remember he threw to Paul Warfield back in those days. And Warfield was really, I think, gosh, I would say for the modern fan, for those who probably weren't alive or aren't aware, Paul Warfield, first of all, he was a former Cleveland Brown. Let's not forget that. That was his name came up in conversation in last week's program.
Yeah.
But Warfield was his day's Jerry Rice.
Really?
I think so. Great athleticism, tremendous hands, speed.
Considered the best.
He was considered. I think he along with, oh gosh, back then, who would have been receivers of that ilk in that era back in the late 60s, early 70s?
Don Hutson?
I think he actually had his time passed in the 60s. I'm thinking 1970s receivers that would have been in that that class would have been probably Lance Allworth or Lance Rensel from the Cowboys. I would say, gosh.
Drew Pearson?
Drew Pearson probably came along later in the 70s.
Right, yeah.
But he was pretty close to that age. How about
the Steelers?
Yes, thank you.
Len Swan.
John Stallworth. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
See, to me, the Swan Stallworth thing has a lot of similarities to Rice and Taylor.
Mm hmm.
In the 80s and early 90s.
Yeah, that's a great parallel.
John Taylor got way overlooked because of Jerry Rice.
Great parallel.
And was a tremendous player in his own right.
Great parallel. Yeah, I totally agree. Well, for the Cowboys, Lance Allworth and Bob Hayes, you know, back in the, they were more 19,
Bob.
They were more 1960s, but, you know, complementing each other. Usually one great receiver that stands out that you is considered Hall of Fame caliber is complemented by another of that caliber on the same roster. You can go up and down through, you know, the eons of history to find that. But Warfield was definitely one of those guys of that caliber for the Miami Dolphins back there when Bob Greasy was quarterbacking. There's no doubt in my mind. So, you know, those were, you know, obviously, as we all know, the last 17-0. So, that was some pretty heady times for the Miami Dolphins, and I want to get into some of that with him at 3 o'clock Eastern time this afternoon.
Have you ever talked to him before?
I have never had the privilege.
Wow, so this really is a special
playbook. I have never had the privilege. He's one of these guys that, like I said, I've always sort of worshipped from afar. I spent most of my, like I said, my adolescence hating him because, you know, he's the Dolphins, you know. And of course, you know, when you think of the Dolphins, the one thing that comes to my mind is Mercury Morris talking about, hey, we 17-0 again, you know, at the start of every year when the last undefeated team goes down. And that just irks me, you know, because they're just rubbing their noses in it, which is even more painful for the Patriots to have gone through that in 07.
Yeah.
And not get it done.
Yeah, I know. I was at that press conference in Phoenix.
Yes, I want anybody to do it just to shut up Mercury Morris.
Yeah.
Really?
They had those spots made. I forgot who. I don't think it was Nike. It was somebody made spots for Perfectville.
Yeah.
Show like the Patriots moving their truck in.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. I remember that.
You know?
I remember that. Yeah, I remember the commercial. Damn it. What the hell?
He went on and on in that press conference too. Oh man!
Oh, I know. It's painful. It actually is painful. So I'm looking forward to this. So this will be good stuff, and hopefully he'll give us some knowledge. You know, obviously I want to ask him about you know, the entire Jonathan Martin, Richie Incognito thing, and get his perspective on the inside, because I know for a fact that kind of stuff didn't happen back in his day. Just didn't happen. You know, there's a certain.
It was a different era.
I know it was a different era, but it was just
different.
You know, it's just way too. God, I hate to say this, Eric, but I'm going to say it. It's just way too PC now. It just is. We're just so unbelievably scared of being politically incorrect. I don't think sometimes anybody knows how to fart correctly. You know, so I'm just and I mean that in a joking sense, but I almost mean that literally because, frankly, there's just it's football. This is different. This is not everyday life. This is not waking up, going to work, 9 to 5, going home, facing sexual harassment at the office place. This is not that. This to me is set apart from that because, you know, a pro football player, a professional athlete, period. I don't mean to set them aside and say that they're better, but the world in which they operate is at a different level than the world you and I operate in.
Oh, you guys are pussies.
Okay.
Well,
who said that? I didn't.
That was Fred.
Oh, thank you. That's right. That was Fred. I forgot that.
I certainly agree that it's a different world that they operate in, but I don't think it should be a different work environment as far as the rules of workplace behavior are concerned. I don't think it should be. I mean, what happens on the practice field and in a game, obviously that's different than the work environment that you and I might have in a cubicle type atmosphere. But as far as everything else, you know, meetings, locker room, that's their version of a desk. That's their office. You know, I don't see why they should be exempt from the rules that the rest of us have to abide by in the workplace.
You know, I certainly understand that on the surface, but I would tell you that I think you're being naive if you really believe that, you know, professional athletes don't already operate at a different level than everybody else.
No, I agree that their environment is a different one in so many respects. And the fact that so much of it is male dominated too, that there's that cultural aspect of it, because very few places now do you have all one gender working in the same place. Mm-hmm. So they might feel like they can get away with certain things. But more and more, football is becoming an area where women are taking prominent positions in not just the front office, but in the media and just every day. I mean, you go in the Patriots locker room every day, there are women walking around in that locker room for any number of reasons.
Sure.
You know, look at the Patriots staff right now. One of the people in the football operations staff who was in charge of everyday operations around here is a woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean that's different.
Sure,
that's
I get it.
So these guys can't go around acting like 16-year-old kids in a high school locker room. It just that's not going to fly.
I don't know that they're acting like 16-year-old kids in a locker room. I think what they're doing is they're only continuing. Well, that may very well be, but they're only continuing what they've already learned and all what they've already been told is okay. So they're really, I mean, this is a bigger societal issue, and I just. Frankly, I think unless you've played the sport, unless you've been inside the locker room and you have done both yourself, you understand that this is not everyday stuff. It doesn't mean that it can't be held accountable like everyday people are held accountable as they are in their own places of work and business. It's just different. That's all I can tell you. I don't even know that there's a correct way for me to accurately describe it. But you've lived through it yourself, and you've seen it from both sides of the fence.
Yeah. But and that's why... I like to point out that when rookies come in here, not just here and anywhere, when rookies come into the league, one of the things that they, many of them often, point out when they're asked what the differences between the pro level and college, and is the fact that this is a job for them now. This is a business. They take it seriously. This is their livelihood. It's still a game, but it's not all fun and games because there's so much, there's so much of their livelihood riding on how they perform now, and that they have to act differently, they have to speak differently when they're in public. A lot of them realize this, and a lot of them say that. So, to me, that's just further proof that there is a difference between a locker room at this level and a locker room at even the college level or the high school level. It's different. You're right, but it's also different in that it's a job now. It's this is quote unquote the real world, even if it's the surreal world, because they still live in this bubble of the pampering that they get and the money that they make and all of the things that go with that. But I don't think they should be immune from the everyday laws that those of us in who aren't in that environment have to operate under.
I just got this message on Facebook from Daryl, who says, John, so does this mean we can hold the military to a different standard since it's an alternative work environment?
There are a lot of similarities, I think, between that. And again, there, too, women are taking more prominent roles in there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now they're, just recently the discussion came up about putting women in combat positions. Not just being in the military and serving as, support or, not in the front line, but talking about front lines combat. I mean, that's a change from even 10 years ago.
Honestly, I have never had to be, I've never been faced with being, having a gun in my hand and having to do battle or being in the trenches, so to speak. So I will not even pretend to speak to that. But I would tell you that I can only imagine, based on what, the people that I know and love, and I've had relatives in the military, that I kind of believe that maybe should be set aside a bit for certain things. Certainly, harassment and sexual harassment and things like that, that doesn't really go. But I would also tell you that I think there's a lot of sexism that's certainly inherent in the military. And women know full well, once they get involved, that that's partly something that they have to learn to deal with, just like women in professional sports realize that there's going to be a certain amount of boys club stuff that they have to put up with. As you said yourself, they're walking around in the locker room, and sometimes guy drops trowel because he's got to go to the shower or got to go training or whatever.
It happens all the time.
And nobody says anything. And it's almost good, in effect, that nobody says anything because it's commonplace. And that's where we all need to get. We need to get to the point where it's commonplace so nobody realizes the gender of an individual when we are, going about our personal business.
But you will not see a male reporter walking around the women's locker room.
You will not.
After a basketball or soccer game or a tennis match.
That
or whatever.
Is correct. And to me, that's...
And I don't think you'll ever see that.
Probably not, but it's still a double standard. It's still a double standard. Ladies, it's a double standard. If you want women reporters to have the right to male locker rooms, males should have equal access. They do not have it. It's that simple. They don't. And is it because females don't trust males? Well, that's probably inherent in the species. But other than that, it's a double standard. So all I'm saying is here is that we have, as a society, as humans, we have created double standards ourselves. And so if we're going to ask football players to live up to the same thing as the rest of society, well, then society should capitulate. They don't. They don't. That's really my entire point here. So to answer, you know, the Facebook poster question, you know, should we hold the military to a different standard? No. No, we shouldn't. Military should be allowed to do whatever's necessary. If they're protecting us and our freedoms, they should be allowed to do whatever's necessary. That's how I look at it. That's just a personal opinion. That is not an opinion of, you know, the Playbook or Patriots.com radio. That's just John Rook's opinion. And of course,
within reason. I mean, they can't operate with impunity.
No, I'm not. You can't go out and just shoot to kill and say, well, you know.
Or harass anybody.
But I'm just saying, you know, battle, things like that. I mean, considering the circumstance, every circumstance needs to be treated differently. You know, we can't cookie cutter this, Eric. We can't cookie cutter it. I'm saying that football can't be cookie cuttered because it's different. It's inherently different. Doesn't mean that we don't treat each individual situation like, you know, Martin and Incognito, with great care and certainly some introspect and some reflectiveness and all that kind of stuff that's got to go into making the situation right so it does not happen again. But to just smooth over it and say, you know, football should be more like society? No, not going to happen. Won't ever happen. Not in my opinion. That's why I'm kind of interested in talking to Bob about it at the top of the next hour. So how do you like that? We digress for the first, 25 minutes of the program. That's pretty good.
As we're wont to do.
All right. How about a practice report today?
All right. Nate Solder was a surprise not being there. I don't know if it's injury related or not. We'll find out in about an hour and a half. But that was the big surprise to me today, his absence.
He didn't appear.
Didn't appear to be hurt in the game the other day. No, it's possible it's not an injury.
He got pistol whipped a couple of times around.
Oh, sure,
he
got beat plenty of times. Yeah, but I didn't think he got hurt. At least didn't appear that way. And Aaron Dobson continues his absence. He's been out since the Denver game, about midway through the Denver
game. What do we know about his injury?
Left foot, he's been wearing a medical boot. Saw him at the stadium on Sunday, up in the press box, actually. But that doesn't look like, and the fact that they re-signed Austin Colley, I think, was, you know.
Who saw some playing time.
Yeah, had to. I mean, just sheer numbers. He had to get on the field. Kenrell Tompkins was practicing, but obviously wasn't available for the game with his hip. You remember he hurt himself at Houston falling down, but he's out there. So just two absences. Marcus Cannon came back for the first time since the Denver game.
Well, that's a step in the right direction.
With his right ankle. Brandon Bolden, who was not at practice last Friday or active for the Cleveland game, but not for injury reasons, we were told, was also back on the field. So,
okay.
Some good news, some not so good news. And Michael Haomanu'i continues to, looks like he's making progress with his left knee injury. It looked like he was doing a little bit more, slightly more than he did last week. He was inactive for the game as well, but he seems like he's at least making progress.
That would also be a huge step in the right direction since there's no more Gronk. And I would ask you in this regard, without Rob Gronkowski now, you think we might actually see more 3 and 4 wide, you know, sets and in order to try to spread this thing out? Because Gronk was out when the team made the comeback on Sunday.
He was. The only thing there is you don't have a lot of healthy receivers either, so you might be forced to put two tight ends, two receivers, or even two running backs and, you know, two wides and a tight end. I mean, you know, and by that I mean you put James Devlin gets more action now. And, you know, he's a guy
who's
been...
By the way, hell of a catch and run by him out of the backfield, wasn't it?
Yeah, he I think, has been...
Wasn't he lined up as a tight end technically in that play?
I think he was in motion. He might have been like in a tight end position. He motioned to the right side and then ran a great out and up pattern against the linebacker.
Nobody paid him one dead.
Well, no, they did. They did.
Well, then
he ran a great pattern. He had a linebacker on him and he beat the linebacker with a nice move and got a good step. He wasn't wide open. But he made a great
move.
He had about two yard separation because of the move. But he is certainly, easily, my vote for most improved player this year.
Really?
Well, I mean, he's a guy who was on the practice squad last year and, as you know, was a defensive player in college, has been an offensive player in the pros, but hasn't really found, you know, a place where he can stick. I think he finally has here in New England and continues to get better as a blocker, as a receiver. You know, he got his first rushing touchdown a couple of weeks ago. He's definitely my most improved Patriot in 2013.
That's pretty good. We'll probably get to that at some point in time before the year is over for most improved and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, James Devlin, huh?
Yes, without question.
Especially when you consider that he was a defensive end in college.
Mm-hmm.
Even more important.
Yeah.
Go Bruno. Bears, right?
That's right.
An Ivy League kid.
Mm-hmm.
Getting it done.
Yeah.
All right. Nice.
Not that many of them in the NFL.
No, there are not. Having once done Ivy League football myself a number of years ago.
That's right.
You can really kind of appreciate that a little bit.
And he's a decent kid, too.
Yes, he is.
He's not, he's not letting this stuff go to his head yet. Mm-hmm. And nice to talk to.
I honestly believe he looks at this as an opportunity, as a hell of an opportunity. And it's coming his way because there's been so many guys fall down in front of him.
Yeah, and I just wish more of those guys would take that approach throughout their career. You know, be grateful that they've had the longevity, the lucrative contracts. You know, I think some of them tend to lose sight of that, living in that different world that we were talking about,
mm-hmm.
our digression earlier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But he's a nice kid, and you like to see guys like that do well.
All right, so now that we know what we know, and this team continues to confound most all of us, and I think you probably have to say that was a pretty well. Let's see, if you're going to do this in social media, I think you'd say New England Patriots .. That sound about right? We're all shaking our heads on that one.
Wow, just wow.
Yeah, or wow, just wow, or even LOL or something like that, just because it's kind of like, it's almost too much to believe.
SMDH, I mean, shaking my damn head.
That too. I'm just wondering
yeah,
where you are in trying to look back over this over the last couple of days and figuring out, you know, can we figure out this team? Can we reasonably have any expectations for the Patriots this year?
We kind of started talking about this on the last show, and a caller actually had a question along those lines, and it got me thinking about Seattle earlier in the year. When there were a couple of games where they should have lost. They were down by double digits on the road and games that they probably should have lost, but they ended up coming back and winning. That was at the beginning of the season, and you didn't really quite know if Seattle was for real or not. As the season has progressed, I think it's pretty clear Seattle is the best or one of the two or three best teams in the NFL right now. They've made significant progress since those early days. I'm a little more troubled that the Patriots are now going through what Seattle went through earlier in the year, where they've had to come back. And, you know, it's great that they have come back and won most of those games, but I don't like that it's happening now, as you're supposed to know exactly who you are. And maybe they do now know who they are. Maybe they're just a team that isn't that good, but mm-hmm. is finding these miraculous ways to win. I'm just, I don't know if they can sustain it for the next month and a half and get to New York in early February.
I fail to see how they're going to be able to do it. I'm hoping that they can sort of limp to the line and just sort of survive in advance. Somebody made the analogy last week. It might have been you. I don't even remember exactly. But now this team is in playoff mode. Playoff mode started a week or more ago because, you know, aesthetics don't matter. Style points don't count.
Mm-hmm.
It's get a win, move on to the next
yeah.
week. Hopefully
yeah.
circle the wagons, determine where your dead are, so to speak, and then, you know, man up again. And that's really where this team is.
Yeah.
You have to treat every week now with the attitude that this week is going to be our last week.
And it's a very good point. And I worry a little bit about this game for several reasons, but particularly that they haven't yet wrapped up the division.
Yeah.
And just to show the margin of difference in the NFL, a win against Cleveland and a Miami loss against Pittsburgh this past Sunday would have given New England the AFC East, which would have meant this game this Sunday wouldn't have been as important for being in the playoffs. Obviously, it still would have meant a lot for getting that number two seed.
And it still would have been a heck of a lot for the Dolphins, too.
Sure, sure. But the Dolphins would have been that much further out of the wild card picture. New England would have already at least had had a 3 or a 4 seed
right.
wrapped up. The margin is so small. Did you see the highlights of the Pittsburgh-Miami
mm-hmm.
game?
Mm-hmm.
How on the very last play when they were doing the Cal-Stanford tossing the ball back and forth, they actually scored.
Stepped out of bounds.
But he stepped out of bounds by this much.
Maybe by an
inch. On the 10-yard line
maybe
or wherever it was, like close to the 10-yard line.
Yeah.
That much cost New England the AFC East last week.
That's right.
Which makes this game this Sunday far more important than it should have been going into this week.
All because?
Because a toe stepped on the white chalk.
That's right.
In Pittsburgh.
So that's how far away you were.
That's the difference.
That's the difference between clinching the AFC East and still having to have work to do.
Right. And it's Miami's a tough place to play historically for New England.
We know this. Yes.
And Miami jumped out to the big lead when they were here in when was it, October mm-hmm. when they came here.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not going to be a gimme game. Not going to be a gimme game. And if New England loses, I hate for it to come down to week 17 Buffalo for them to have to clinch the division.
But I think it might.
Because the next week you have to go to Baltimore, which thankfully got flexed, so we don't have to worry about an overnight trip. Back home from there. It'll still be late night, but it won't be an overnight. That's not going to be easy either. I mean, Baltimore is now starting to play better. They're playing more like the Baltimore I expected to see.
Baltimore right now sits in that sixth spot. We talked about this yesterday. They hold the last spot.
And I don't think they're going to give it up.
No, and it's by virtue of their head-to-head win over the Dolphins back in, I think, week 5. So that's really the difference. Miami not only has to win, but then they have to hope for some help.
Yeah. So, these next couple of games are
huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
So, it would have been nice to at least have had the 3 or 4 seed wrapped up.
Put out.
So
right
that
there.
You can, know.
But right now, you haven't clinched the 3 or the 4, much less the 2. And you got 3 weeks left in the season to do it. And it's really through no fault of your own.
Mm.
You're doing what you're supposed to do. You're winning.
Mm.
The team won. They probably shouldn't have. Cleveland probably deserved to win. We kind of went through this yesterday. But the fact is that you did what you had to do to win. In the last 2 minutes and 39 seconds of the game, Tom Brady led you to 2 touchdowns and you recovered a beautifully executed onside kick.
Yeah.
I talked about this yesterday. Wasn't that a thing of beauty?
It was.
As a kicker, I know you can, and as an ex-kicker, I know you can appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely. It's so rare that an onside kick works.
Well, let me ask you this, because clearly the secret to that play, middle bunt, again, I described it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
The secret to that play is having the kicker actually serve almost as a screener.
As a blocker.
As a blocker.
Yes.
So knowing, that that's coming, if the play is called like that.
You're going to expect to get hit in the back.
Oh, my God. You got to expect to get racked, brother.
Oh, yeah.
Because now teams are figuring this out. And so, it's not going to take them long to figure it out. Okay, we got to take out the kicker.
Right.
Player A knocks out the kicker. Person B is there to pick up the ball.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you got to be proactive on this. Because if you let that ball get to that 10-yard limit right there, you got to go grab the ball if you're going to defend that properly.
You
got to make a play on the ball if you're the receiving team.
Yeah. And that's what Fozzie Whitaker didn't do. He tried to make a play on the ball and it ended up squirting away from him.
Problem was they didn't have anybody to take Gostkowski out. Gostkowski was the perfect foil in that instance. It worked.
And that's probably that, they probably that I don't think they were going to tell us they and they actually they Bill, I think Bill said I'm not going to talk about the strategy behind it, but they probably go to the line with Gostkowski having the option. If you see that there's nobody assigned to you, bunt up the middle and then we'll do that. If somebody's on you, then just go for
Pooch it or do the sideline thing. You hit it short and hope that it bounces up in the air for your guys to go leap
and get. Do the normal onside kick.
Correct.
If no one's on you.
Right. Middle bunt.
Do that. And then there's they'll signal somehow once they get to line up for the formation.
Sure. Absolutely.
But I kind of knew something was up as he was approaching the ball because the guys on his left started motioning to his side and to go behind him. And as you know, in the rules now, you can't overload one side with more than 6 guys.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the fact that those guys started moving over more to Gostkowski as it was happening, I started thinking, oh, he's going to probably, pooch it up the middle a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've seen that work other times in college and maybe in the pros where they completely leave the kicker alone and he gets it himself easily and falls on it after the 10 yards. But they got a little lucky with that, too, because, Fozzie Whitaker was right there. He could have easily fallen on it, and that would have been the end of the game.
Sure.
It just bounced off of him, and Kyle Arrington was one of those guys that came over and was in the right spot.
Correct.
Boy.
An amazing play. And when you consider, you know, the everything that, that could have gone bad didn't. And the Patriots had a, what, 1% or 2% chance of recovering and then going down to score on top of that. It makes the victory even that more remarkable. And so you have to wonder, maybe sometimes, frankly, I mean, there's just no better explanation than karma.
That's kind of what the caller in the last show was kind of asking about. Was like, do you think this team doesn't, you know, doesn't care anymore that they're winning games the way they're winning because it's just meant to
be? I can't imagine that they would care. It's a win. A win is a win is a win is a win. And I think that's the way most fans look at it. And like I said, we said this last week.
It's hard to feel
week.
Confident, though, don't you think?
No, I understand. I mean, you're still winning, but you're not confident about winning. And it's because of the way you're winning. Mm. Certainly, style points matter. Style points are what you remember. How you get there. Not that you got there. Sometimes that you reach the end of the journey, you forget about, or it's sort of anticlimactic. It's how you got there. It's the journey travel that people remember most, to me anyway, especially when it comes to, you know, sport and football and things along those lines. I mean, do you actually remember the details of the game? Well, the Super Bowl game, I think we all remember the big game in 07, you know, and the ball was snatched to the side of the head, David Tyree, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But I remember more the road travel getting there in the whole, you know, trying to get to the 17-0 part in the regular season.
Yeah.
So, or 16-0 and then continuing undefeated like that. And so, to me, I've sort of glossed over the actual championship game itself, but the journey, because the journey was actually the tougher part of it. I actually remember the tougher part, and I probably appreciate that a little bit more from having gone through it as someone who, you know, lives through it on a almost daily basis around here. And I do that in my own, you know, the other sports that I cover as well. The journey is what you tend to remember, the individual moments less so. And so from a football team perspective here, I got to think, you know, man, you know, survive in advance. It's just like trying to advance in tournament play, you know, the March Madness and all that stuff. Just, you know, okay, that one's done. Forget about it. You really don't need to remember about it. The only thing you need to remember is if you have to play that team again somewhere in the playoffs. And if you do, then you can pull out the game tapes and the notes and everything else, and you can refresh your memory and you can get up to speed on things. But right now, now more than ever, I guess here's what I'm driving at. Now more than ever, I understand and I get the philosophy of next in the NFL, where they say, you know, all right, you know, Bill always opens up his press conferences every week. All right, we're on to so and so here, right? And I understand that mentality. I really do. Whereas, you know, you're hoping that you'll open up with a comment about the last game being an exciting finish, what have you. Well, you know, we're on to Miami here. How he opened up this week. He opens up that way every week.
Mm-hmm.
And after a number of years, I think we finally are starting to catch on why it is the way it is. Because this is all about winning the mini battles so you can ultimately win the war that the Patriots have not won in a while. Of course, winning the war would be winning the Super Bowl in this instance. But, you know, that was a battle along the way that hopefully you can sort of file away and remember how you did it. Because clearly when you scored 12 points, 13 points now on the last 101, which technically is what happened, and you needed a lot of help to get there. But now, if the Patriots get to that position again, and I think a lot of people are saying, no, don't say that, because you hope that they don't get there. But I think we're all realistic enough to know that it's probably going to happen again before this year's over. And if it does, this team now has supreme confidence that, you know, they can accomplish whatever it is they need to accomplish. That is the one X factor that you just really cannot quantify here. The confidence factor. You know, guys are dropping like flies, but what are the constants here? Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, you know, Shane Vereen's back, Danny Amendola's back, Julian Edelman's certainly been he's been a constant.
Tlaib, so, for the most part, has been a constant.
Relatively speaking. So, I mean, you especially offensively, yeah, it's going to hurt to miss Gronk.
Jones and Ninkovich.
But there's still enough there on offense where I think you can see that, you know, all right, what you need to avoid here is getting yourself into a big hole, which we've seen now for, you know, 3-4 weeks in a row, and you've got to avoid the hole. And if somehow you can avoid the hole,
yeah,
then you're going to be in good shape. I have a sneaking suspicion this team is going to dig a hole again at Miami, because Miami is probably going to be more than equal to the task in terms of emotion, because their backs literally are to the wall. If they lose, they're pretty much done. Not only in the division, they're eliminated,
but for the wild card,
then if Baltimore wins, they're two games back with two to play, and that's not going to happen.
No.
Plus, Baltimore owns the tiebreaker, so they're out.
Pretty much.
They're out. They are out. Yeah. That's it. It's over. They can be eliminated this week if Baltimore wins. They're two back, two to play, and Baltimore owns the tiebreaker. If Baltimore loses their last two, they can't possibly get in. Hmm. They are eliminated this week. So believe you me, they're going to play with an urgency. There's no doubt in my mind. And I also believe that,
I believe you.
Yes, exactly. I also believe very strongly that, they probably feel like they should have won the game here, in October.
The Broncos probably feel that way. Mm-hmm. The Browns, I'm sure, feel that way. The Saints feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of teams can say that.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm sure that they'll take a good hard look at it. And by the way, I should probably mention this, but
Houston
probably. Oh, definitely Houston. You know that. You know they're going to pull out their letter jacket and say we should have won that game. so stinking goofy, just goofy. What is this? High school? Come on. So, I gotta. You know, where the Dolphins are concerned, I have major concerns this week.
And kudos to you last week too. We all thought, it's going to be a blowout. You were one of the lone voices saying, "I still have concerns."
Well,
were right.
I will be the first to man up here and also say I did not get my pick correctly because I took the Patriots and the points.
Yeah,
remember I said 33-16, but I said I'm still not settled on this yet. But I ultimately capitulated and I was wrong. So my record drops to 10-3 now against the spread. I should have gone with my gut, and that's where going against my gut, because I was kind of getting on the bandwagon with everybody else, but my gut was to go against the points in this, just because that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. So now, have you seen the early line on this one?
No.
I haven't seen it either, so maybe somebody can fill us in. But I'm going to guess it's probably going to be 2 or 3 points either way. I'd be surprised if the Dolphins were favored, but...
I wouldn't.
Really?
No. I'd say... Even if it's like 2.5 or 1.5, I think the Dolphins will probably be favored.
Hmm. Well, if it's Dolphins and say by 1.5 or 2, I might take the Pats. But if it's Patriots in like 3 to 3.5, I think I'd have to take the Dolphins. I think this will be right down to the end. I think a field goal could win it at the end type of game. I firmly expect that. I'm not sure. I haven't decided yet, Eric, but I don't feel real strong about these next two.
Yeah, me neither.
I think the Patriots are going to lose one of them.
I do too, and I think it'll be next week in Baltimore.
So you don't think? So your early indication is they win in Miami.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be easy, but I think they do get it. But not next week.
I just don't know how these guys can defend. I don't know
who?
How the Patriots. I think we've seen this defense over the last 4 weeks is giving up over 400 yards and over 28 points per game over the last 4 weeks.
I know.
That's just, you know, that's just not good.
It's troublesome.
Troublesome. It's it's a lot more than that, and yet they've managed to win 3 of the 4.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they'll find a way to get it done this week, but next week's going to be the tougher challenge.
See, to me, even with Gronk going out, the bigger concern is on the defensive side of the ball. I don't think there's any question in my mind. The bigger concern has to be
certainly the run defense
side of the ball.
Yeah,
run defense is just non-existent. Pass defense is shaky only because of the injury situations that you have in the secondary. Linebackers, frankly, I saw a little more out of Dante Hightower this week.
Correct.
So,
Jamie Collins is playing a little bit better.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I did want to go there before we ran out of time today. I think Jamie Collins, I think we're starting to see the learning curve, and I think he's starting to catch on, which is why you're starting to see him out there more.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we see now that he also has the ability to cover receivers coming out of there
a little bit more,
a little better than what we've seen certainly out of Hightower and Spikes.
Yes. Yes. Oh, no doubt. Yeah, Spikes is not a coverage.
No.
No.
So because of that, I'm not unhappy with the fact that Collins is getting considerably more time. That actually might be the saving grace. If his learning curve continues to go on an upward tick here over the last 3 weeks of the regular season, this guy can end up being a saving grace for this team defensively. Thoughts?
He's helpful. I don't want to get too... I don't want to get too optimistic yet because he's made some plays, but he's still got some growing to do. I like what I've seen though lately. I definitely do because earlier in the year when Mayo was healthy, his opportunities were very limited. And when they were going into nickel and dime, you know, he wasn't getting that many chances getting on the field. But he is now, and I don't see him making the type of plays that, say, Ninkovich or Jones or, to some extent, Andre Carter lately have been making. But he's definitely better in coverage. He's getting – his presence is being felt in the backfield more often than not. And I'm seeing some speed and athleticism that we were told Hightower had, but he hasn't really displayed much of.
No, he hasn't.
So, yeah, it's a silver lining that he's been able to get some playing time. And we're seeing – improvement from him. That's a good thing.
And I think we'll see more and more playing time from him as well.
Yes.
You know, we talked about, I think, Ninkovich and or even Dane Fletcher getting more time because of their ability to cover.
Yeah.
But maybe this is the answer to that.
Maybe. And Fletcher started the game, believe it or not, against Cleveland, played the first series, really, and was kind of relegated to the bench after that. Didn't really do anything.
No. Why is that?
I don't know.
Did he get hurt?
No. No.
Not that I saw.
No, because he and Spikes were subbing early on, and then all of a sudden Spikes got the rest of the game for pretty much on defense. I didn't understand why, but maybe they felt Spikes was better against the run, and they thought that Cleveland was going to, you know, I don't know.
By the way, New England, 2.5 over Miami.
So we were right in the ballpark.
I said it would probably be 2.5 to 3.
Either way. Yeah.
New England right now.
So New England, based on the record, is getting the...
Yes. They're getting the benefit of the doubt. And so my guess would be they'll probably also get some of the early money.
So you'll take the Dolphins then still with the points? Or?
Right now, I'm telling you right now that at 2.5, I'm going to take the Patriots. But
yeah,
that's what I'm leaning. But if that grows to 3,
yeah,
I think I'm leaning toward Miami.
Wow, another nail biter.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's how I'm leaning. Just leaning on it right now. I think this could end up being a 2 or 3 point game, one on a kick at the end by either side. And I don't have a feel for it either way, other than, you know, the Patriots helped themselves, or unfortunately, they helped Cleveland out by shooting themselves in the foot with a couple of turnovers last week, and they didn't get one themselves.
Right.
So because of that, that did make the game more difficult for New England. They cannot go on the road against Miami and commit a fumble or throw a couple of picks or whatever it would be and not get something back and expect to win this game this week. Miami, first of all, yes, is better than Cleveland. Number two, it's on the road. So, and Miami's going to be playing with a heck of a lot more urgency than Cleveland was this last week.
And Cleveland was pretty good.
Cleveland played pretty well. And I have to give, I think we have to give, and I mentioned this in yesterday's show.
They played that way all year.
They have played pretty well all year. You have to give North Turner a lot of credit. And the credit that I really give is Jason Campbell. That guy impressed the you know what out of me.
He's played well against New England.
And I like him as a quarterback. And he earned himself, in my book, he earned a job somewhere next year. Because he's not going to be the man in Cleveland. They're going to go out and they're going to draft somebody. I don't know if they'll go get, you know, Teddy Bridgewater or whoever the big, you know, guy is coming out of the college ranks next year. That'll probably end up, you know, Cleveland will probably have a run just because of the record at him. But Jason Campbell's going to go to somebody. And I don't know if he gets a starter's role, but I would be very comfortable having him here in a backup role.
He has every time
very
he's played
comfortable.
With and each time has been with a different team. He's looked pretty good against this team.
Yes, he has
over the years.
I'm telling you, the guy can play. He's still got it. If he stays healthy, he's still got it. He's got some game. Patriots probably wouldn't allow him to run the way that he does, but he still can make plays with his feet.
Throws a good ball.
Vastly undervalued. And underrated. Mm-hmm. And it's probably because he has bounced around and hasn't been the beneficiary of, you know, what I would call great pro coaching. But, he looks like he's still got game to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hope he gets a shot somewhere, but I wouldn't mind him seeing coming here. If that's, you know, if the Patriots decided they were going to use, Ryan Mallett as trade bait for something else somewhere on down the line, okay, go sign Jason Campbell. Because I know he'll be looking for a gig. Yes? No?
I can see that.
I absolutely could see it.
Hadn't thought of it, but until you just mentioned it. But
why not?
Yeah, why not?
Why not? He impressed the heck out of me, and you know that the Patriots are big on that. They're big on the, well, if we can't beat him, join him type of thing. Sign him. You know, like they did with Welker and the like. One other player that I wanted to talk about in terms of improvement, and we talked about Jamie Collins, on the offensive side of the ball is Josh Boyce. We're starting to see him emerge, not just in the kicking game, but we're starting to see him emerge as a wideout as well.
Out of necessity.
out of necessity, maybe. Nevertheless, he seems to be at least delivering what should be expected of him.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't quite impressed me on kickoff returns as I'd hoped, or at least that's the area where I thought maybe he would have more of an impact, and really hasn't done a whole lot there, and maybe that's a result of the blocking up front, because nobody that they put back there seems to be able to get past the 22 or 24-yard line.
No.
But offensively, I think he is starting to maybe show a little promise. Just hasn't had many opportunities to get the ball thrown his way.
Well, he has been behind Dobson and Tompkins all year long. And
right.
I don't know whether it's because of the learning curve or because of a nagging injury. And it may have been a little bit of both. A little bit of both. The number that I love I got from ESPN Boston today was 71 total snaps by Josh Boyce going into the game. He had 72 alone in the game Sunday. That's pretty good.
Yeah. And again,
and it's also significant.
Yes, they had four wide receivers, well, five if you count Matthew Slater, but they had Amendola, Edelman, Boyce, Colley,
mm-hmm.
and Matthew Slater. Those were your five receivers. So mm-hmm. you knew he was going to get snaps, but that's a significant number. Yeah.
It is a significant number. So he, you know,
basically played every snap.
Played every snap of the game just about on offense. And to that end, then now more is going to be expected of him. All right, he's in there. He's got to be in there now because he's what you have.
Mm.
So now you need to expect him to produce. And if this team is going to somehow, and we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, the way they're going to win games apparently here, and I don't think there's any more good example of Exhibit A here than what we saw last week against Cleveland. You will have to outscore, literally outscore teams and hit, you know, 28 to 30 plus a game to win games from here on out. I think that's just the way the 2013 Patriots are going to go. Because I just don't know reasonably you can expect the Patriots defense as it presently consists to hold teams to much under 28. And the numbers will bear that out over the last 4 weeks.
Yeah. Sad.
So if the defense is going to be giving up 400 yards and 28 points, the offense better be coming up with 29 to 30. That's all I can tell you. And if the offense has got to come up with 29 to 30 a game, Josh Boyce has got to be, he's got to have a role. Got to have a role because you're going to have to be able to spread this thing out so teams cannot key on one receiver like they were able to double on occasion on Gronk.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're, you know, I mean, what are they going to do now? They're going to double on Amendola and or Edelman? I mean, I guess they could conceivably, but then you'd better have another option. If now teams are going to say, all right, well, you know what? We don't have to worry about the tight end anymore when we're covering the Patriots. Who's going to hurt us? Well, Edelman, that's the first one that probably comes to mind. Vereen, coming out of the backfield. You're going to see him shouted with a backer without a doubt. You know, so
I'll take my chances with that. I like that matchup.
All right,
I'll take Vereen.
But if you're gonna do that, then all right, and then you're gonna use a safety over the top maybe, and let's just give the defense the benefit of the doubt and say that the backer's able to get him out of the backfield. That's gonna leave somebody open somewhere. And it's going to give, you know, Boyce a chance. It's going to give, you know, it depends on the offensive set you're running. It'll give Devlin a chance. It'll give Hooman a chance. It'll give somebody an opportunity to make big plays. Somebody's going to get the shot here.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. We need health. We need relative health.
Next man up.
As well as you get it. And next man up. The problem is we're getting down to the bottom of the list.
Yeah.
That's the big concern here.
Yeah.
So, all right, so steps in the right direction, but overall, it's just going to be this way, as I suggested, for the rest of the year. You're going to have to kind of hope to, you know, the offense is still going to be high powered enough to put more points on the board than the opposition. I think that will certainly be the case this week against Miami. If the Patriots are to win, then they'll have to score 30. If the Patriots don't score 30, Miami probably wins it, and they probably win it relatively comfortably. So if Miami comes to play, and the Patriots are, you know, down to, you know, 10 points or less at halftime, I certainly like Miami's chance in the second half. Although, I'm sure there are Patriot fans right now screaming at me saying, yeah, but we were down by 12 with 2 minutes to go and we won last week.
Yeah,
that's the confounding part out of all of this.
That's not a way to live in the NFL, I don't think. I don't think you want to live that way.
Does anybody
want to
live that way?
You'll take it, like you said, because it's playoff time, playoff mode. You'll take the wins, but I don't know how you can feel confident going into a week. I don't know how you can feel confident being down, you know, 24 points against a good team and expect, oh, yeah, we'll come back. We'll come back. Sure, they've been doing it, but I don't know. I certainly wouldn't feel I wouldn't like my chances.
Well, that's the question I want to ask here for hour number two of the program. I've been SMHing, you know, for the last couple of days here. And I really can't come up with any one definitive, reason for what we've seen other than there's just great resiliency on this team, and I don't know how you measure that. So my question to our fans, and we, you know, sorry that I'm late in opening up the phones, the email, but you should know that you can call in and you can email and you can tweet and you can, you know, Facebook at any time that we're live here on the program. And many of you tweet and Facebook me even when the show is not live here on Patriots.com. And that's all fine because I do hold on to those and I use many of them for the show when we are back on the air. But web radio at Patriots.com, the email. 855-PATS-500, the toll-free telephone number, or the ACE ticket hotline, 508-298-0398. At JR Broadcaster on Twitter, John.Rook on Facebook. How are the Patriots winning, and what do they need to do to continue winning? It's a very simple question. How are they winning in your estimation? What are they doing? What's special about this team? What have you noticed? Do they have sunshine, you know, blown up their skirt here, so to speak? What are they doing? And then the more important part of this question is, how do they sustain this for 3 weeks in the regular season and for the upcoming playoffs? And again, nothing's been clinched yet. That's the scary part.
Yeah, I know.
That's the scary part. If the Patriots lost these last three games,
it's a completely different story.
It's a different story. All bets are off the table. And if you get in, you're getting in by the skin of your teeth.
And if they don't win one or two of the next three games, that could be a completely different story.
Sure, sure. So how do they win? In fact, Steve and Colleen is going to lead us off because he put this out there before I even asked the question. So Steve, I give you the kudos here for having the presence of mind here. He says, first, let me give credit where it's due. Brady actually coined the label Minitron for Edelman. We talked about that yesterday, and I was like, who said that? And I got about 16 tweets, literally. Oh, it was Brady. He called him Minitron. Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. Next, my take on how the Pats can continue to win. He says, one, up-tempo on offense. Two, run the ball. Scares me a little bit, but I see field position and time of possession critical going forward. Three, dink and dunk. Engaging the Wookiees, backs out of the backfield. And then four, thank you, play with attitude. This may sound a bit silly, but more than ever, I want this team as a whole to play with fire. And I mean like Spartans in 300 fire. That's fiery.
Well, yeah, they need to execute much better in the beginning of games. They just haven't been.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like training camp sometimes.
I totally agree. It looks like this team, sometimes this team looks lost.
Yeah.
And they should not be this lost
this
for
late.
Week 14.
No.
I mean, that's just ridiculous.
No.
And it makes me wonder, is this team really as good as we're looking at?
Well, I think, but
the record is 10-3.
But I think, as I said earlier, you know, you're supposed to know who you are as a team right now. I think they might know who they are as a team. They're a team that's not very good, but manages to do enough just at the end to win. They're banged up, certainly, but they're not the only ones. They're finding a way at the end. They're just barely coming through with enough. They're doing just enough.
Well, that's what I want you to help me with here in hour number two. Web radio at patriots.com, 855-PATS-500, at JR Broadcaster, John.Rook on Facebook. How are the Patriots doing this? What do they need to do in your mind to keep it going so the playoffs can be realized and maybe even some success in the playoffs? You got some ingredients, some secret things we can kick around, some obvious things that we're just overlooking here, or maybe there's something we haven't discussed that has dawned on you when you consider the Patriots. Help us out. Contribute to the program here now, number two. Before we let you go here, Eric, Brian in Essex, Vermont says, John, they may think it's a different world that they live in, but it isn't. Talking about the pro football players. That's why Aaron Hernandez is in jail and Dennard is looking at jail time after the season is over, to name but a few players who think they exist in a different reality to the rest of us. I think you mistake PC with common sense and respect. Do you think the Redskins name controversy is PC, or do you think Redskin is a term that, you know, maybe several indigenous populations of the North American continent might have a valid issue with? With regards to Incognito Martin, do we still know the actual facts? Has the league released that info yet? No, they have not. Without context, of some of his statements could be considered in extremely poor taste or worse, but we have no idea what the norm for that locker room was. I will certainly admit that locker room environments will be a tad more crass than an office, but there's a line you don't cross, especially with people you don't know. Until I get a chance to read what the investigators find, I'm reserving judgment on this particular case. The problem with that, Brian, and thank you for your well-thought-out email, problem with that is that most locker rooms are considered to be already a tad more crass than you just suggested. And so coming from that environment, no one, I mean, almost to a man.
Bunker environment.
It's a bunker it? Yeah. environment. I'm here with my brothers. We're all in this together.
Yeah.
And so
the military comparisons are manifold.
It is. And there are a ton of comparisons that are probably apropos. I mean, I realize football players aren't going out and, you know, shooting people, but
right.
it's the
there
same.
Are similarities.
There are similarities. And so I can tell you that, you know, people you don't know. Well, yes, you do. In a football locker room, you should know your teammates because of the fact that you are, going to battle with them, so to speak. Just like you'd know your the soldier you're fighting behind in a ditch somewhere.
Foxhole, or
what have you.
Right.
So that's the only thing I would disagree with you there, Brian. You do know these people. You should know these people. The coaches usually take great pains to making sure you know these people. They put rookies through their paces every year so the veterans can know these rookies that are coming into the team with them because they're going to end up, you know, slugging it out side by side with these newcomers onto the team. Yes, no, maybe. What do you think?
Yeah, for the most part, I agree with you. I mean, to his point, though, about the NFL's investigation, I really am curious as to what they're going to come out with.
Well,
what they're going to find.
Yeah, we honestly don't know yet.
But, yeah.
But I think whatever comes out of it, I think we're going to end up seeing a new way of doing things in locker rooms
yes.
around the NFL.
Yes. Oh.
I think we have reached a benchwater mark in the National Football League, and I think you'll find a lot of the crassness, as you put it, Brian, leaving locker rooms
yeah.
because of this.
Yeah, I do, too. I do, too.
So maybe,
I absolutely do.
Maybe that's a good thing. I don't know.
I do think it is a good thing. It's progress.
All right. Well, hopefully, maybe for the better. But, you know, like I said earlier, I'm willing to allow certain things to go on in locker rooms because just of the very nature of the sport.
Sure. I mean, I've worked in plenty of offices where swearing is commonplace, even though it's supposed to be a business environment. You know, things like that I think you could still allow in a locker room setting. But if... You know, the type of harassment that we initially heard coming out of the Martin Incognito thing, if those things were true, that kind of stuff should not be tolerated in any environment.
All right.
No matter how well you know or don't know somebody.
All right. Got to let you go because I know you got writing to do.
A little bit.
But we still have one thing we got to take care of
oh,
first.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather round the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
Kevin, did you see this? He's got the Argyle sweater on today.
Yeah, I did pull up my britches for you.
I do notice how he dresses before I write the bits. Thank you very much. I know I don't pay attention a lot, but that's one thing I paid attention to.
Yeah, the only thing I can't do is the pipe. The cigarette and cigar smoke, pipe smoke, I'm allergic to.
So understood.
I can maybe just use the pipe itself, but I can't actually
smoke
it.
Yeah, I could just
it.
See you kind of with
just
your
holding
monocle
it.
Just
yeah.
kind of
see,
gumming
I could see,
the pipe.
I could, yeah, I could see him holding onto the corn cob pipe.
Chewing on the end of the pipe.
And giving us one of those,
We got to give him the Monopoly Man monocle, too.
Okay.
The Monopoly monocle. Like Mr. Peanut.
I look more like Daddy Warbucks from Andy with my bald head here.
Speaking of bald.
Yes.
The word today is piebald.
Piebald?
Yes.
Well, you really went bald there, didn't you?
Yeah, Jerry, we did.
P-I-B-O-L-D?
Just like it sounds. P-I-E.
B-O-L-D.
B-A-L-D.
B-A-L-D.
Yeah, piebald.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with our hair, though. It's most often used in relation to horses. A piebald horse is one that is splotched with black and white. But it could be referencing any sort of modeled color scheme with various colors. But typically, it's used in relation to black and white horses.
So a piebald color scheme would be a spotted color scheme, basically.
Spotted or multicolored. In a sort of like haphazard kind of way. But if you've ever seen like horses that look like they're speckled with like black and white, mm-hmm, sort of, that would be a piebald horse.
Then I would say in this particular instance, the Patriots' immediate future is probably piebald.
Splotchy with various colors?
With various colors.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, we don't
what
really know.
What colors would those be?
It could be any. We don't know what we're going to get. Okay, it was a stretch, but I still stretched. At least I'm out there stretching, baby.
Yeah. Don't hurt yourself stretching.
Yeah. That's what I thought. That was coming next.
Yeah.
Thanks, Big E.
All right, man. We'll see you tomorrow.
All right. Hang on to the phones, because coming up as well, we have the one and only Hall of Famer Bob Greasy in the playbook.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go. Go. That's it. Come on. Kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call ** NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether the sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochet. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Hey guys, I never really got football, but ever since my parents switched to Verizon Fios, I'm a total expert. Fios internet is super fast, so I can stream football movies, download highlights.
Hey, sweetie, I need help with my fantasy lineup.
Dad, I'm doing my video blog.
Sorry.
Anyway, with Fios, the TV picture is crystal clear, so not now. Listen, Fios is 100% fiber optic, so everything's faster than ever, which leaves me time to do other things, like hanging that do not disturb sign on my door.
Upgrade your game this holiday season. Switch to a Fios Triple Play online for just $79.99 a month guaranteed for the first year, plus a $300 holiday bonus with a two-year agreement. Visit gottogetfios.com today for America's fastest, most reliable internet. Technology that lets you rise to greatness. That's powerful. Price is $89.99 a month for months 13 to 24. Rate may increase after 2 years. Verizon Visa prepaid card issued by Metabank member FDIC. Fios available in select areas. Limited time offer for new customers subscribing to a triple play bundle online with a two-year agreement and ends 1/18/14. Taxes, fees, RSN fee, and other terms apply.
The Patriots Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, autographed memorabilia, and much more, including our new game-worn gear collection, where you can own a piece of authentic Patriots history. The Patriots Pro Shop, located next to Gillette Stadium, is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop, your team, your store.
This is Patriots Hall of Famer Steve Nelson, and you're listening to Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio.
And hour number two inside the playbook, going to get to Bob Greasy momentarily. But I did want to take some time to visit here with Eldridge in North Carolina, who's been kind enough to hang in there. Hey, Eldridge, how are you today? Welcome in the playbook. Good, man.
Answer your second question about the Patriots, how they're doing it.
Yeah.
I think second half is pride. And I think that's the first half they've seen how they're getting their butt kicked. I think pride kicked in.
So you really think this is all about pride, huh?
I think so. You know, and their shield, their Patriot shield, to be honest with you. Because literally they get their butt kicked in the first half for the last 4 weeks. Then they come back, you know, the second half.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they can't put two halves together. And I don't like that, like we said last week, benching of Ridley. But then again, you know, maybe you have to set an example. But I think this is the wrong time to be doing that. You know, set him out a half or whatever. Not a half, but maybe a quarter, then put him back in there.
Yeah.
But other than that, you know, I don't know. And how they going to keep doing it? Somehow they're going to put together two good halves, you know, instead of taking punches from the other team. They got to start giving some punches. And that defense is going to have to step up. I mean, I know the rookies is in the middle, but somehow or another, you know, it's still football. It's man-on-man. I know you're going against an all-pro most of the time, but you got to figure out how to win sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of getting dragged out on the field. And them linebackers, instead of when their light go off, ding, 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 after the second or third quarter, you got to do it from the first quarter to the last quarter. Like I said, it's 60 minutes.
Right.
You got to do it for 60.
Right.
You can't do it for 30.
I agree with that.
And if they keep on one of these games, they ain't gonna come back. You know.
Well, that's the great fear here. I mean, we honestly you know, we keep playing with fire, Scarecrow, to borrow a well-worn cliche. So, you know, when is this fire going to come back and finally burn you? It hasn't done it over the last 3 weeks. They've been actually very, very fortunate. But you got to keep, you know, if you keep digging yourself that kind of a hole, eventually it is going to come back and burn you. So that's why we keep asking the question, how are they actually doing this and not getting burnt yet?
I don't know. Like I said, to me, I think it's pride. I think it's pride towards the end, you know, to be honest with you. They're resilient, and Brady on the sideline, and I think some of the defense, captain, you know.
Can't they have the same amount of, I'm just playing devil's advocate here, Eldridge, but can't they have the same amount of pride in the opening kickoff to say, hey, I'm not going to get my butt beat, and I'm not going to dig myself a two-touchdown hole?
I think they should, but, yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. I think some of them teams, man, they take lightly, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I think some of them, they take lightly. Okay, we the Patriots, they're going to roll over. No, you the Patriots, you got a strike on your back. Everybody want to take you out, no, regardless. You know,
mm-hmm.
even the fans.
Well, that's, you and I know you that. Know, yeah, we know
yes,
that.
Sir. Yes, sir. Because I got a versified family, and when my boy's losing, I get all kind of texts and phone calls. I keep saying, wait till the last quarter.
So were you getting a lot of texts and phone calls in the fourth quarter the last couple of weeks?
Sir, I've been getting it from the first quarter on. I went to the
What's wrong with your boys?
Heck, y'all going down today. And the King, and my brother-in-law is a Peyton Manning fan. And
God.
The King is going to take them apart. So I wrote back, I guess the King got dethroned.
Yeah. I like it. I like it. Well, you just keep pushing your agenda, and maybe these guys will finally figure out how to kickstart, you know, things a little bit earlier. Because I think that's going to be key. My own opinion here is that how can they keep doing what they're doing? They've got to find a way to start faster and start better and not play from two scores behind once you get into the second half. If they could keep things on an even keel and just stay in the game within, you know, a one possession or less type of situation, then I think the Patriots will have every opportunity to win, because they know they can come from behind and take it at the end if given the opportunity, as long as they don't shoot themselves in the foot. But they can't keep digging the big holes. If they can avoid the big holes, there's no reason why they can't win these last three.
And that's what I'm hoping to do, win the last three.
Right.
Now, my question is, okay, we got nobody else on defense that can just step in and just, you know, I mean, like, force him. Is he still on team, or did they get rid of him?
Who?
Some of the other defensive tackles besides Jones and
they haven't gotten rid of anybody.
They haven't?
No.
So they're not good enough to get on the field yet?
Well, I mean, last week, Silver Salinga got the start. Sopoaga did not play all that much because they were looking for a little more, you know, I guess, bulk on the line. I don't know whether, I really don't know whether they thought that was successful or not. I didn't see much of a difference, to be honest with you. So I'm sure that's something they're working on this week.
I didn't either. I saw a lot of running backs running through holes and a lot of passing, and I'm like, shoot, you know. And I don't think they got the camera that many times.
Right.
And that's what,
right. That's right.
That's what was surprising.
Yeah.
That was what was surprising right there. And I know good and well they couldn't catch Gordon. If Gordon break loose, I know they couldn't catch him. But if I was Bill, I'm playing dead backs now. I'd give Cleveland the first, second, and third for Gordon.
Okay. All right.
I would.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Good stuff, Elders. Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. And perfect timing as well, because we have our guest, Kev. We're going to take a little time now to visit with someone who I'm sure the name is very, very familiar to Patriots fans everywhere, Dolphins fans everywhere especially. Bob Greasy is Hall of Fame quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, a part of the Dolphins radio broadcast team. He joined us here in the playbook. Bob, thanks again for taking the time today and make a little time for our fans. I guess that the first question that I would ask today is, how has this Dolphins team changed from the first meeting between these two teams, and has it changed for the better?
Well, I think the names have changed quite a bit in some areas. The offensive line, a couple of the guys on the left side, Jonathan Martin, Incognito, and we went a couple of games there without Mike Pouncey. And Mike Pouncey had some kind of an intestinal problem and missed a couple of games. So that we had three starters the entire left side of the line. But Pouncey's back, and the guys that are in there playing, we've got McKinney, from the Ravens, and the guys that have been filling in seem to have been doing a very good job. In fact, I think the offensive line is playing as well as they've played all year.
Sure, sure. Well, you bring up, obviously, Richie Incognito, or actually more so Jonathan Martin and the Richie Incognito story. How has this team, in your estimation, adjusted to that off-field controversy, and did they do it the right way, in your opinion?
Well, we don't know yet. The lawyer from New York and representing the league office came down, interviewed everybody, and he's going to give his report. And I think once he does give his report, all this is going to be much ado about nothing.
Uh-huh.
I think, you know, you got one player that walked out on the team, wasn't happy, the rest, you know, I think I don't know everything that went on. I don't know, and it's going to come out in the report. So I think the best thing we can do is just wait for the report. Then we'll all have a lot to say about it.
Did you have anything remotely close to that happen in your locker room when you were quarterbacking the Dolphins?
No. Now we had, you know, every team has the hazing that we go through. Hell, when I was at Purdue, I remember not only did I have it when I was a freshman at Purdue,
mm-hmm.
back in the 60s, but, you know, when you pledge a fraternity, I was a Sigma Chi, and there was a bunch of hazing going on there, to be sure, you know.
I remember those days well. I was a Beta at Texas, so believe me, we all went through it, absolutely.
It's just all part of growing up. It all part of maturing. Football teams in college, basketball teams in college, pro teams, hockey teams, well, you know, whatever. It's just part of the nature of the business.
So keeping this, you know, in mind, you know, I believe you brought up the phrase much ado about nothing. There is a larger picture here. Are we too oversensitive nowadays to some of the things that go on in sports, and particularly in professional sports? Because people like to think that, you know, these guys are regular guys like you and I, but I've always sort of contended that really they're not. They kind of operate in their own world. You operated at it in this world for a very, very high level for a number of years. Your son obviously played at a very high level, so you probably could answer this question and be qualified to answer this question as well as anybody. Do we expect too much, you know, from our athletes in terms of asking them to behave like the rest of the world?
Well, I think once they go outside the locker room and get into the public, I think the professional athletes do an outstanding job of going into the community. The Patriots players do. I know I read a lot about them. And the Dolphin players, they have a Dolphin Foundation. They're very involved in the community. But once they're in the, when they're in the locker room, that's their haven. That's their place just to knock around and let the guard down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Just have some fun. You know, it's just guys being guys. You know, it goes on everywhere in college locker rooms, in pro locker rooms, in whatever sport. It's just guys being guys, and that's where they can let their hair down a little bit.
Sometimes I guess we forget that because it's such a big business that it's still a game. Would you agree with that?
It is. It's just a bunch of guys playing the sport. And like I say, when they walk outside, they're representing the organization, they're representing their family, they're representing themselves, and they do a great job of being and interacting in the community and being involved.
Bob Greasy, Hall of Fame quarterback, former Hall of Fame or former quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, back in the heyday, so to speak, with Don Shula in company, joining us here inside Patriots Playbook. You know, it hasn't been lost on too many people that, you know, usually great coaching is accompanied with great quarterbacking. You had Coach Shula. Obviously, Bill Walsh had guys like Joe Montana and Steve Young. And, yes, Bill Belichick has Tom Brady. Does Joe Philbin have something in Ryan Tannehill along those lines?
Well, let's don't crown him yet into that category you just mentioned. But you know what goes on is hold on a second. There
sure.
You go.
Yeah. No problem.
You're
in high demand. I know that.
What I'm very impressed with is what's gone on up in New England and the Patriots. With Tom Brady. And Belichick, he's lost. I mean, how many players have they lost? They're starting.
Yeah.
starting two undrafted free agents in the middle of their defense.
Mm-hmm.
They've lost linebackers. They've lost receivers. They've lost tight ends. You look at how well Brady is playing this year. He's probably overcoming more than he's ever overcome in all of his years, his 14 years with the Patriots. And Belichick's probably doing a better job of coaching with less than he's ever done it before.
A lot of people here would agree with that, think that this might be Coach Belichick's best job, but it's kind of going unnoticed because of the pressure to win. I kind of think that does come with the territory. What's your view of that from the outside looking in, especially as an opponent that's going to face the Patriots this week? I mean, can you give enough credit, or is really does the credit lie with the players more so than the coaching staff?
Well, I see him writing in the first half. I always see him taking notes,
mm-hmm.
and I think he does a great job of adjusting at halftime. I don't see him taking notes in the second half. I always see him taking notes in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's in preseason games in August and September, or whether it's in December and he's got gloves on and a hoodie and he's got something out writing little notes and gloves. I don't know how he can write with those big gloves on, but but he's always taking notes. And he's when they come out the second half, if you're the team that's playing them, boy, you better know that if something was working against the Patriots in the first half, it's probably not going to work in the second half. So you better have something else planned for the second half.
All right, so how has this team, this Dolphins team, gotten better since the 27-17 game here in Foxborough a couple of months ago? Frankly, the Dolphins are 4-2 since that point in time, so clearly something has gotten better. They've overcome the off-field controversy, at least it would appear to this stage, with Richie Incognito and Jonathan Martin. Where has the improvement come from?
I think just overall as a team, they've learned how to play, how to win in the fourth quarter. They went like 8 games where they didn't score a touchdown in the fourth quarter. And last week at Pittsburgh, that game went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and we won it in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
We finished offensively and defensively. We finished so. I think they've grown up. I think they've gotten better and better each week. I think Tannehill gets better the more he's out there. He joined the club, the Troy Polamalu club, of throwing him an interception, and he returned it for a touchdown. But I don't know. But I don't think Polamalu was playing when I played, but I think I probably would have thrown him one as well.
Yeah.
Pretty good player.
He is still a pretty good player. Yes, we have definitely seen that.
Yeah, so Tannehill joined that club and came back from that. So you know, they're just doing well. I don't think this whatever people are calling this thing in Miami that happened affected the team as much as everybody thinks it did.
Interesting. Let's dial that back then 2-3 weeks before the loss to the Patriots here in Foxborough to a game that you played against the Ravens. And Baltimore won that 26-23. Now, both teams have similar records, 7-6 going into this week, but since the Ravens hold this quote-unquote tiebreaker because of head-to-head, technically the Dolphins are on the outside looking in. Does that make this Sunday any more of a must-win for Miami?
Well, it does, and then after we go against the Patriots, we're going to be rooting for you guys next week when you guys play the Ravens.
Sure, sure, so, absolutely.
So the ideal thing for is the Dolphins to finally beat the Patriots in Miami, and then send you off, and you guys can go do some work for us up in Baltimore.
Love to help you out if we can.
You guys got plenty of room. Although I know you want to win out and hopefully have Denver lose a game and get the home field advantage, but you've got the division wrapped up, so you can spare a few games.
Certainly, and if Miami does manage to win the game this Sunday, then with 2 weeks left, there's still just a 2-game spread between the teams. It won't be easy, but mathematically, that does give Miami a shot here.
For the division, yeah,
sure,
but
absolutely.
You know, but you guys are going to go into and beat the Ravens, so.
I like your confidence, actually. I think that's actually good.
You guys are going to lose 2 in a row. You ain't going to lose to us and then lose to the Ravens as well.
Well, I would say that the odds of that would probably be high, but you never know, because that's the brilliance with the NFL, and I think that the league has done a pretty good job in balancing these things out overall. Just a quick question then, if I might, concerning that balance in the NFL. We've seen injuries just crush so many teams. The Patriots have managed to overcome them to this point in time, but you have to wonder where the point of diminishing returns actually begins. Do you see, as someone who's been around the game for a long time at a very high level, do you see the competition committee getting involved here and trying to rectify any of the, I don't know, hitting rules, targeting rules, doing something to try to protect these players more, or is this just the nature of the beast?
Well, I don't know. The first thing they tried to do was react to all this concussion, all the lawsuits and all that other stuff.
Sure.
that guys were coming up with. I mean, you know, guys were actually having problems in their 50s and 60s because they had concussions back in the day when they played.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the NFL was right in doing that, you know, protecting their head. But now what it's caused, and Gronkowski went down last week, is now everybody's trying to hit low, and we lost Brandon Gibson,
mm-hmm.
The tight end that we picked up this year from the Jets. He went out in the preseason with a low hit. So I don't know what they're going to do. I think they're right in trying to eliminate the helmet-to-helmet hits on some of these, but now everybody's going low, and now the guys are blowing out their knees. So I don't know what the answer is.
You know, I've heard so many people say that the NFL 30 years from now is going to be so much different from what we're seeing now and maybe from what we saw 30 years ago, especially when you were around the game on a daily basis, that we won't recognize it. Do you see the game going that direction?
Well, you're right about it's changed a lot since I played. You know, when Paul Warfield was lining up outside for me, and he was my number one target. He was my Jerry Rice.
Mm-hmm.
Some people said, how do you pair him with Jerry Rice? I said, you can't. Because Jerry Rice nobody could touch Jerry Rice after 5 yards from the line of scrimmage. Teams used to come up and throw cross body blocks on mm-hmm. Warfield, not to let him off the line of scrimmage. And then he'd beat that, try to knock him down, and he'd go upfield. And he'd be 10 or 15 yards downfield, and they'd still be jamming him and pushing him, and he'd go across the field. So that is a big change. The pass protection, the not hitting the quarterback, you know, all the rules have changed, so it's so hard to compare teams of different eras.
Sure.
And players of different eras because of the rule changes. And people love... People love the grace and the beauty of a long thrown pass and a guy jumping up and catching the ball, and I think they love the violence of a guy just going up and just knocking the heck out of somebody.
Right.
I think that's what the NFL. I think that's the thing that everybody loves about the NFL, the most popular sport in the world, is the beauty and grace and the violent collision.
I would agree 110%. If final question for you here, if you could change one thing about today's game, and maybe go back to something that was more prevalent when you were playing, is there something there?
I don't know. I think you have to. I like the rules protecting the quarterbacks because the people want to see the best players. And the best players are at the quarterback position because that's the guy that drives the team. That's the guy that motivates the team, makes the plays. And you don't want to have a year where Tom Brady is not playing. You
mm-hmm.
don't want to have the fact that Peyton Manning is not playing or Aaron Rodgers is not playing. People want to see these guys. So I think I wouldn't change the rules protecting those guys, but. I don't know. I don't know what else I would change. I just don't know. But I'd keep protecting quarterbacks the way they have been for the last few years.
Spoken like a true quarterback. Once a QB, always a QB.
That's it.
Absolutely. Bob Greasy, Hall of Fame quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, now part of the Dolphins radio broadcast crew, Patriots and the Dolphins this Sunday in Miami. Bob, it was a pleasure to speak with you today. Thanks for making time for our fans.
All right, and we'll see you when you get down here.
Yes, sir, you will. Thank you very much.
It's nice and toasty down here.
Thank you for that. We need that. Appreciate that very much today.
All right, what's your weather up there?
Right now, it is snow on the ground. About 3 inches is what we had yesterday, and the temperatures are in the 30s.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Well, sun is shining, though. That's a bonus. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Bob.
See you later.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Love it. Absolutely love it. Always had to get us, he has to give us that little dig at the very end about the weather.
That was your first time ever interviewing Bob, right?
Yes, that's my first time.
Couldn't have been more gracious, and he gave us so much of his time. He did. Really, I appreciate it.
Very, very much appreciative of him giving his time. It took us a while to work on this because I know you were working on this, Kevin. Kudos to you. But you were working on this the first time around we played the Dolphins.
He's a very busy guy. Little did I know.
He's still, as you can imagine, in high demand in South Florida and as a part of the broadcast team with Jimmy Cefalo now on the radio.
It's not every day we get a Hall of Famer in the playbook either. Special day.
Very true. So very much appreciative of Bob Greasy spending the time with us today and with you today. And hopefully you enjoyed some of that. And I think he offered a little bit of insight. You know, I'll have to go back and maybe re-listen to it again. But, you know, as I'm always busy trying to think of the next question. But in all honesty, I think there's some insight there on, you know, the inner workings of a locker room.
Yeah.
How especially back in his day, this just would not have happened. The whole Martin Incognito thing.
Yeah, I know we were trying to focus a little bit on the game coming up, but I got the most interesting part of the interview was definitely him describing his take on the Incognito situation.
Yeah.
And likening it to the locker room that he was a part of back in the day. And to hear him just kind of say, you know, boys will be boys, and, you know, they have to be so uptight and buttoned up outside the locker room, and the locker room's their chance to, quote-unquote, let their hair down and be themselves.
Right.
I couldn't agree more, and I know you're probably of similar thinking, both of us having played sports when we were younger and being part of those locker rooms ourselves.
Frankly, that was the best part of the whole fact of playing the team was having that kind of camaraderie with your friends.
And being part of that community and being accepted into that community.
No question.
I thought that was great stuff on his part.
No question. No question. So, anyway, hopefully some insight there that you can enjoy. We'll get into more of the nitty gritty and some of the X and O stuff about, you know, this week's game, you know, in tomorrow's show, as we typically do on Thursdays.
He also really wants us to beat the Ravens, huh?
He really, I got that impression.
Said that like four times.
I got that impression. He's like, all right, we got to beat you this week, but then you got to help us out and take care of the Ravens next week. And that's their mindset. I said that early in the program today to Eric. That's their mindset. They are up against it. They know, even though they're the same record to Baltimore because they lost to Baltimore earlier this year, which is why I asked him a question. This is it. This is it. They're done. They are toasted if they don't win this game on Sunday. Unless, of course, somehow Baltimore also loses this week.
Also sort of interesting, I think you just hit the nail on the head in another way, too. He was so focused on, you know, them beating the Patriots and the Patriots beating Baltimore.
Yeah.
It was so sort of like, this division's over.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of us up
almost conceding things.
Exactly. Whereas a lot of us up here,
we don't see it
after
yet.
Miami pulled off that great victory in Pittsburgh in the snow.
And as Eric pointed out, we missed clinching the AFC East title by an inch.
Exactly.
By an inch.
Exactly. It's like in baseball, they always say that last out, the 27th out for the closer is
always
the hardest, you know?
Always the toughest.
That last game to clinch is always the toughest. And now, as a Patriot fan, we're up here, John. We watch Miami, a warm weather team, go up and win in the snow, which is very impressive.
Yep.
And down here in Foxborough, the Patriots barely, on a miracle, beat the Browns and lose their best offensive player. And so we're just kind of thinking, well, pump the brakes on giving up on the division if you're a Dolphins fan. You know?
Well, you might think about that, although I know he's just being realistic.
No, I can appreciate that, but it's just funny to hear that's what's the great part about talking to guys in other markets. You look at how we're viewing this game.
Yeah, there's no question.
Thinking we need to win this to win the division, and they're sort of already kind of giving the division up, just trying to focus on getting that wild card spot.
No doubt.
So it's really great to get the dual perspective of us and then versus that market down there.
No doubt. All right, let's throw the question of the day out there one more time to you. Well, we got about 20 minutes left of the program. We'll grab a break so you can pen your thoughts or tweet your thoughts or call or whatever you like, and then we'll move on. But the question of the day is how the Patriots are doing it. How are they doing in your estimation, and what do they need to do to continue winning for these last three regular season games? Can they? Or have you pretty much kind of admitted to yourself deep down that this team isn't going anywhere this year? I really would love to hear your thoughts on this. Is there something more they can do? Is there something they're not doing now? Do you have the equation in your mind? Or have you already pretty much given up the ghost? Webradio@patriots.com, the email address, 855-PATS-500, the toll-free telephone number. The Ace Ticket Online is 508-298-0398. Find me on Facebook at or John.Rook on Facebook, and then at JR Broadcaster on Twitter. All right, how are the Patriots doing it? We'll talk about it coming up in the playbook.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epocher. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Hey guys, I never really got football, but ever since my parents switched to Verizon Fios, I'm a total expert. Fios internet is super fast, so I can stream football movies, download highlights.
Hey, sweetie, I need help with my fantasy lineup.
Dad, I'm doing my video blog.
Sorry.
Anyway, with Fios, the TV picture is crystal clear, so not now. Listen, Fios is 100% fiber optic, so everything's faster than ever, which leaves me time to do other things, like hanging that Do Not Disturb sign on my door.
Upgrade your game this holiday season. Switch to a Fios Triple Play online for just $79.99 a month, guaranteed for the first year, plus a $300 holiday bonus with a two-year agreement. Visit gottogetfios.com today for America's fastest, most reliable internet. Technology that lets you rise to greatness. That's powerful. Price is $89.99 a month for months 13 to 24. Rate may increase after 2 years. Verizon Visa prepaid card issued by MetaBank member FDIC. Fios available in select areas. Limited time offer for new customers subscribing to a triple play bundle online with a two-year agreement and ends 1/18/14. Taxes, fees, RSN fee, and other terms apply.
The Patriots Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, autographed memorabilia, and much more, including our new game-worn gear collection, where you can own a piece of authentic Patriots history. The Patriots Pro Shop, located next to Gillette Stadium, is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop, your team, your store. Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected. Now's your chance to hit up John Rook inside the Patriots playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Call 508-298-0398. That's 508-298-0398. Now, back to your host, John Rook.
All right, just a few minutes left of the program. We want you to take your time to give us your thoughts here on this team and how the heck they're trying to, how they're doing this. How are they winning? And how best can they sustain this? Because this is one of those things that has caused us to just kind of stop and think and wonder and maybe jaw drop in amazement and all kinds of things. Because after what they did this last week against Cleveland and knowing that they have this game in Miami, which is, as we've already talked about today, traditionally a tough place for this New England franchise to play. At least they got the timing of it right. It seems like the last couple of years we've had the trips to Miami in the fall. We actually asked for, and I guess this time received, the trip to Miami in the wintertime where the weather, you know, isn't quite as bad, right? But that's the case now. So you get a chance to go down there and be warm, I guess, if you're going down to the game. Anybody going down for the game? Maybe we can talk about this a little bit more tomorrow as well. But be curious to note what you're doing in your pre-holiday festivities and if, you know, the Miami game is going to be part of it, because I know traditionally a lot of New England fans that live right here in the immediate Boston, Providence, you know, southern New England area in particular, do make the trek southward for the Miami game every year. So be curious to know if you're headed out that way and what your thoughts are about how this team potentially continuing the run that they're on when you've got 3 weeks left and you don't really know how they're doing it. Pawan in Secaucus, New Jersey says, some things that I think the Patriots can do are the play calling on the opening drive or couple of drives should be more of running and screen passes. The only play that the Patriots can execute with the highest probability is the screen pass play. And that's actually a good point, Pawan. I kind of agree with that. Seems like that and a lot of that is because of the explosiveness that Shane Vereen has shown that he still possesses that we really missed for half of the year when he went down in the season opener. Now that he's back, teams have to start game planning for that. So I expect more and more teams to put somebody, a backer, somebody on him, marking him out of the offensive backfield. He says also, just for a change and see if this works, but take the possession of the ball if they win the toss. Isn't that blaspheme? In this case, they will get a good sense of the opposing team's defense and make the necessary adjustments earlier than at halftime, which they're doing now. Also, it avoids the offense being down early on, hence playing from behind. Well, it's a great thought, and I think we've all kind of said that at one time or another this year. It's like, hey, let's switch this up. Let's go with the ball. But this is typical Bill Belichick. If the Patriots, you know, win the toss, they always – and I think maybe, have they even won the coin toss this year and accepted the kick? I don't think they have. I think every time that the Patriots have received to start the game, and it really hasn't been that many, three or four maybe, but every time they've received, they've lost the coin flip. So they've had no choice to receive it. I think every time they've won the flip, they have opted to take the kick off in the second half. They really like the whole two-for-one thing because they expect, you know, the two-minute drill coming down. Nobody's better at it really right now in the NFL than Tom Brady. So you hope for the fact that you get some points on the board late, and then you get the first drive of the third quarter, and then, you know, what you've done in effect is a double pounding of your opponent right there. You know, if you're 7 to 10 points down at halftime, let's say you close fast with a field goal and you pull within 7 at the break, you know, but you were down 10, say, with a minute or two left to go in the first half. All of a sudden, 5 minutes into the second half, you're tied. That can have a demoralizing effect on the opponent. I think that's why the Patriots do what they do. And I'm sure they've done their own research on this numbers-wise, that they feel like their odds, if we're down, their odds of coming back have greatly increased if they have the first possession of the ball to start the second half. And as we heard Bob Greasy just tell us, one of the things he likes most about Bill Belichick and why he thinks Belichick is doing right now one of the, if not the best coaching job in the NFL right now, is because he always notices on the sideline what? Did you hear him say this in the interview? He always notices Belichick taking notes on the sideline during the first halves of games. The Patriots are as good as anybody in the league in adjustments. Just ask the Houston Texans, because they think the Patriots cheat. They're so good at adjusting. They think the Patriots cheat, or at least Antonio Smith does. But a guy's taking notes. The coaches are taking notes. The head man's taking notes. So you go into the locker room. You've only got 15 minutes, 14 minutes really, because that's what's put up on the stadium clocks for halftime. And so, you know, you've got to be all about business when you get into the locker room. It's not just, you know, all the guys are laying around, you know. No, they're not doing that. Coaches are bringing them together. They're meeting in positions. They're doing this. They're doing that. And they're trying to make these adjustments. The Patriots adjust as well as anybody in the league. That's what the halftime is used for. And it's worked. I would tell you in this particular instance, I agree with a couple of the suggestions that we've had thus far, that got to figure out a way to start faster. I certainly think that taking the football to start the game is one of those ways you could do that. There's no doubt in my mind. I agree with that, Pawan. I don't think that they'll do it, but I certainly think that would that beats, you know, digging yourself a 10-point hole early, which is what seems to be what they're doing. I think that's a really good way to look at it. Melvin in Tennessee, you're in the playbook. Hey, Melvin.
Hey, what's up, John?
How you doing?
I'm pretty good.
Good.
Pretty good. I've been out of commission for a while. I've been at a clinical in a nursing home, so I've been tied up during the days, but now I'm done with that, so I'm back.
Well, I hope you're okay.
Yeah. It's been a long road, but I'm okay. But
good.
Man, speaking of Memphis, since the last time I talked to you, this team has been on all kind of rockets, from high offense to high defense. Now, you know, low offense, low defense. You know, you never know what this team is going to be. But I think now, since they've lost Gronkowski and at this, you know, pivotal point of the season, I'm more concerned with what's been going on with this defense these last couple of weeks. I've been so confident.
Yeah.
And going against the Houston Texans now, I mean, they had all these backup players in, all this kind of problem. They were going against, you know, the Cleveland Browns. I was like, the Browns will take care of this. I'm looking to go to sleep by halftime. I'm ready for my Sunday nap. But, you know, unfortunately, my heart's been pounding these last couple of Sundays. But, you know, the only thing I think that the Patriots got away with these last couple of years that I think they probably would need to do that I haven't seen is, you know, this red zone defense that I thought that normally limited a lot of teams. They normally give up a yard, which I was okay with. But I was confident once they get down the field, I was like, okay, here comes my stop. But they've been giving up a lot of scores here. That's my problem, that I think that now these teams are sort of, throughout the years, getting up to low 20s when they have limited, you know, a couple of field goals now, here and there. Now they're, you know, Houston's getting 30-something points. A lot of teams are getting more in the low 30s than the low 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that'll be the start. And, of course, they haven't been able to get that turnover that this defense has thrived on, seems like. So with that vote, and normally the offense takes that one turnover and blows the game open. Now I'm concerned about if this offense can blow the game open with this one touchdown. Because if this offense goes back to what it looked like the first Jets game or something like that, which I think the rookie receivers have come along, this offense, you know, the receivers have looked a little bit better, I mean, since that time. So I think, but now they're injured.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know how that's going to, you know, affect this offense. So it's really a roller coaster, to be honest. It's a lot riding on this game. If they look like, you know, crapola, like Fred said a long time ago, they look like that again. In Miami, then, you know, I would change my feeling about how this team might, you know, how long they might last in the postseason.
But, well, then really, how do we keep them from looking like crapola, like Fred says? I mean, how do we keep them from doing this, knowing what we have going forward? How does this team do things differently that can keep them running, you know, into ultimately the Super Bowl, which is where everybody wants this team to be?
Unfortunately, I would have to say, even though we've said it before, and I don't think it could work, but running the ball, I think works. Taking the ball, you know, getting off the faster starts, which I'm trying to, you know, like you just got through saying, I don't know if taking the ball will work anyway. I mean, I just think that it might put yourself even in a further hole if you take that first couple opportunities and you screw up.
Yeah.
And you're not prepared, you know. So I think that, personally, I think that you're going to have to, I always thought this offense would, if they could run the football, which I've seen sparks of, but if they can line up and run the ball with, you know, it. I don't know if you could, man, we're really fumbling that ball.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you know, it's a concern there. The offensive line, whenever we gave them the opportunity to run their football, given the opportunities, they haven't looked all that great doing it. So I think you have to go towards that again, unfortunately, and see how that works.
Yeah.
More Marine. Hopefully this time, you know, you got to get your tight end involved. They did not do that at the beginning of the year. Whoever their tight end is going to be, whenever they come back to be healthy, or if they are healthy, you got to utilize them and not just, you know, that's not doing.
In other words, yeah. In other words, you don't have Gronk there, but whoever you do have there, you still got to throw to keep the defense honest.
Right.
And I would agree with that. I thought that they did get away from that. And I thought Josh McDaniels got away from that when Gronk wasn't in the game. Yes, I agree with that.
So I think you're going to have to try to run it, and it messes you up, to be honest, because this kind of, I know we know what, you know, Danny Woodhead was, but he would come through with big plays, even through those little sneaky draws sometimes.
Well, now you're going to have Shane Vereen get targeted because he's starting to, you know, to have that kind of an output and that kind of an impact. So you're definitely going to see teams starting to shadow Shane Vereen, especially when he's in there on passing downs. The thing that'll make Vereen more effective, Melvin, in my opinion, is having him there on running downs. He's got to be effective between the tackles running the football. So this is probably automatically. It's not because Stephen Ridley fumbles, but it's because Shane Vereen's got to be on the field so he can actually be effective when they really need him, and that's in passing downs.
Right, and he's you know, running the ball. Then he's kind of seemed like his little, you know, the little catch out the backfield that he was just so, you know, crucial at in that Texas playoff game last year. I don't know if his hand's messing up or not, but he's going to have to, you know, rear that ball in. He's missed that the last couple of games.
Yep.
So it's really going to be on him. You know, just you got to use more of your back. Get to a couple more screen games, stuff like that. Just, I think if they can get back to what they're doing, you know, with, you know, quick screen to Elderman or something like that, and running the ball and using, I think they still have enough what they need on offense to put up, you know, maybe 24 points. Maybe I'm being crazy.
They need more than that, Melvin. That's the problem. They need more than 24. They're going to have to go 28, 30 plus a game.
Right.
Because the defense, I said this earlier in the program, the defense has given up 400 yards and 28.6, I think it is, per game over the last 4 weeks. That's down in the Jacksonville Jaguars numbers. So if your defense is giving up 28 a game, you dang sure better have 31 on the board.
Well, then if we're at 31, now I'm really concerned, because I think the only thing you can do to limit that is if they're getting 28, you're going to have to get it down in the red zone, like my original point, and stop them down there a couple of times.
No.
They can kick the field, though.
And they
can't do that?
Yeah, I know, and I think that's a real concern. I don't know that they can. I think the defense is what it is right now, and I'm not sure it's going to get appreciably better. I hope, like all of us, I hope, but I have my doubts. So I think the only way that you get to the promised land is you're just going to have to put the pedal to the metal on offense. I think that may be the best way to do it.
Well, if we can do that, I'm concerned. But I say one more thing, then I get off. But do you remember that last when we played the Ravens, the year we went to the Super Bowl? And I think Woodhead took the ball out of the kick from a kickoff, and he fumbled. And we had that key moment to where, you know, we had those three key plays that defense. Oh, well, we had a defensive stop there that limited them to a field goal. Do you remember that?
Vaguely.
Okay. Well, that was a very key moment to where I think that, although, you know, and we barely won that game. Obviously, that year we went to the Super Bowl, but he plays like that can make the difference, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really.
Right.
You go on to the Super Bowl and they're missing their field goal, and, you know, or them, whatever, they might not even need that field goal. They would have been playing in the Super Bowl for, I guess, their second straight year. But
right. You
really need to limit those times, you know, that you need to tighten up down there. I think this defense, you know, I'm just as concerned as you are. That's just my hope. That's
right.
What I think they would have to do. But they're going to have to get better at situation of football down there and tighten up and, you know, not allowing those touchdowns. Not 28 points too much.
You are correct.
I would agree. You don't have to limit it that.
That's
all I have to say, John.
Good stuff, Melvin. All right, I'm glad you're well. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate that. Let me squeeze in a couple of emails. Let's see what we got here. This one comes from Gustavo in Mission. He says, first of all, basically what I think is happening here feels much like what happened with the Ravens last year. I think the team's finding a way to win because they're not giving up that easy. I think they're playing with spirit, one of the keys to all the comebacks we've seen. The team is winning differently than past years. There are no more blowouts. I guess the main big picture is with everything the team has gone through and Hernandez and Welker and the Broncos and the Wookiees and losing key starters on both sides of the ball. Thank you, Kevin. You're on the ball today. Patriots haven't lost their team spirit, and I think that will carry on into the postseason. When the going gets tough, the tough gets going. Ho, 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 ho. I feel an Animal House reference coming up here.
Are the Germans bombing Pearl Harbor?
Pearl Harbor? That's exactly right. No. Oh, love it. Absolutely love it. Where's John Belushi when you need him, right? Roosevelt in Portland, Oregon.
By the way, last week was the anniversary of that.
Wow. What is that, 30?
37th was last week.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about, okay, God, yes. Hello. I thought we were saying, was that the anniversary of Animal House? No. Yes, I know. Yes. In fact, I watched a couple of specials on the History Channel about Pearl Harbor. Really amazing.
Yeah, I was privileged two years ago to make my first visit.
It is. If you've never had the privilege of never had the opportunity to go to Hawaii, one of the first things you've got to do is go to the USS Arizona Memorial. It's breathtaking. It's hallowed ground.
Yeah,
it really is.
I went on my rant last week on Facebook because I woke up on like, I think it was on a Saturday. It was this past Saturday. And I woke up and it was like a typical Saturday. And you go on Facebook and Twitter and there was just like nothing about it. So I just went on my rant on Facebook. My personal crusade to make people aware of the actual day.
Yeah, I agree. And I think
you go there, your life's never the same.
No, I think you look at things a lot differently.
Yeah, exactly. And you're more sensitive to people remembering it once you go there.
No doubt. We can't ever forget. Roosevelt says, do you recall how Belichick, Brady, and company would respond in game to those slights? Well, that's the missing link. Those slights are the sparks to lighting the fire of attitude the Patriots have shown in previous years. He says, remember several years ago when other teams would make the slightest slight about the Patriots. Simply put, the Pats need a chip on their shoulder. Manufacture a reason, any excuse to get that punch you in the mouth attitude. That's probably as good as any, Roosevelt. You're right. Let's manufacture the boulder on the shoulder. Might work. Jay near Rochester. It took a day and a half. I finally got over my depression about losing Gronk for the rest of the year. Sad to say, I'm starting to think as great as he is flat-out injury-prone. It's not a knock on him, but he seems to be unlucky in that regard. The fact that he gets the ball so much and draws so much coverage just increases the number of big hits he takes, and the poor guy pays for it. Spot on, Jay. I think the offense should still be able to move the ball without him, but everyone will need to step up, similar to when Bledsoe got hurt in 0-1. The entire offense stepped up to support Brady. I can feel the entire offense needs to step up and do their jobs, including Tom. For any success in the playoffs, they'll all have to be perfect on every play, not just in the final moments. Ridley needs to return to his feature role. Vereen needs to be the focus of the passing game. Line needs to keep Brady upright so he doesn't clench up, which is when he's at his worst. Tom needs to not try to be his old self and think he can do everything. He needs to be more of a game manager like he was earlier in his career. The defense is what it is. With all the injuries, we're lucky they're playing as well as they are. I think we all need to hold on for the bumpy ride that will be the remainder of our season. He said, one question I'm hoping you can answer for me as I end. What happened to Aaron Dobson? He is hurt. He has got his injured foot in a boot. Hopefully, he will return, but it does not look good. He was one of two players missing from practice today. Eric in San Gabriel. How to win the Super Bowl, he says. One, go back to bend but don't break on defense. Two, rotate the rookie receivers, the Wookiees, and utilize them as deep threats to open up the middle of the field. Opportunistic plays for Devlin, Mulligan, Hooman. Commit to the running game to set up play action. Run a trick play a game. To keep defenses off balance, be aggressive, take risks in the play calling. Thank you, Eric from San Gabriel. Greatly appreciated. All right. Andrew in Buffalo, you got the final word. Go.
Hey, John.
Hey, Andrew.
How you doing?
Good, man.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of you know, people, you know, saying that they got hope, you know, for the season and the playoffs. I mean, my hopes will be given up probably in the playoffs because the lack of playmaking ability on the defense. I feel like it's never, I mean, if people keep saying, oh, the defense is going to get better, I mean, I feel like this week 14, about to be going on 15, and it's like, you know, you are who you are. What you see is what you got, and I just don't see any improvement, you know, and it's just going to be a struggle down in the stretch. And that throw by Baltimore, Joe Flacco, that game-winning touchdown, that stuff, that kind of playmaking ability kind of scares me. This team that pretty much scares me. I mean, that right there is championship caliber, you know, playmaking ability right there. I mean, what can you do about that? Perfect coverage, but throws it right in there. Obviously, you got to, you know, that's just money for it. But, yeah, I mean, I just feel like we're going to get in the playoffs, but I don't think we're going to lose the divisional round, but the AFC Championship probably against Denver, we'll probably get caught here. I don't want to, but I'm being more realistic than, you know, optimistic.
Well, I think you bring up some decent points. You don't want to get too caught up in it. But at the same time, you, as a Patriots fan, I'm sure you have hope. This team did somehow manufacture its way to 10 wins. I think we all realize that the road is going to be a little bit tougher here at the tail end of the season because you're going to have a Dolphins team and a Ravens team back-to-back here that are both desperate for wins against the Patriots because they need to get in to the postseason tournament, Buffalo less so. But if the Patriots get into a situation where a bye is not in play, I'm going to like Buffalo's chances a heck of a lot more because the Patriots would want to take that last week to rest whatever you know healthy bodies they have remaining. So, you know, you hope that you have something clinched before you get to that last week. That's what I'm saying. Otherwise, you're really going to be in a pickle.
Yeah, whoever would have thought Miami would have been in the mix. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. But, yeah, I'll be calling back tomorrow for predictions. Good show today. I'll be talking to you tomorrow, John. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate your taking the time today. That's all the time we have for today. Our thanks to, of course, Eric Scalavino from Patriot Football Weekly, Hall of Fame quarterback, from the Miami Dolphins, Bob Greasy, for taking the time to join us on the program today. Tomorrow's program, Armando Salguero, our friend from the Miami Herald, he will join us in the playbook. He's the one, of course, that broke all the big stuff about Richie Incognito and Jonathan Martin earlier this season with the Dolphins and visited with us before the first time these two teams played back in October. He will be back with us in the playbook on Thursday, as will Russell S. Baxter, ProFootballGuru.com. He'll be with us tomorrow. You won't want to miss it. We'll X and O it. We'll talk about it. 3 weeks to go. Got to get a win. Clench the yeast. That has to be on Patriot minds right now. Same patch time, same patch channel, mañana.
Yoo-hoo, Baxter!
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program.
Ron Jaworski,
Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2. Yeah.